Welcome to the Running Explained podcast. I'm your host, Coach Elizabeth. When I started running at the age of 29, I had so many questions and what felt like nowhere to turn to for answers. So now I'm here to answer all your questions about running and running adjacent topics to help you become a better, smarter, more knowledgeable runner. Whether you're brand new or you've been doing this for a while, there's always more we can learn about running. And now you can train with Running Explained wherever you go. Check out the new Run Club by Running Explained app. The Run Club by Running Explained gives you the freedom to build your own training schedule using Running Explained training plans, including training for races, building your base, post-race recovery, running for fitness, and more, and you can swap between plans as needed. Then layer on a running-specific strength training program that matches your goals and includes plyo, core, and mobility. Plus, you have instant access to a variety of resources at your fingertips, including training guides, pacing resources, Run Fueling 101, and more. Join the Run Club Plus for a monthly live group coaching call led by me, Coach Elizabeth, plus in-app chat support and other fun inclusions. Start your 3-day free trial now at runningexplained.co/theRunClub or by visiting the link in the show notes. And now, let's get started. My guest this week is physical therapist Dr. Kate Bochnowitz. You may remember Kate from her season 2 appearance talking about heavy lifting for runners and ways to incorporate and why to incorporate heavy strength training as a runner. And this week she's back to talk about something entirely different: running and living with chronic illness. Now, this conversation is for anyone who is currently living with chronic illness or living with something that resembles a long-term issue, like going through chemotherapy or other health issue that limits your ability to train the way that you want to. And I would even go so far as to extend this to anybody dealing with mental health issues that limit your ability to train the way that you want to. Now, we all face challenges in our life, but the challenges of living with chronic illness and training as an endurance athlete are unique. And this episode, Kate brings her lived experience and professional experience to the conversation. Kate Bochnowitz, welcome back to the show. I'm excited to have you here again.
Thank you for having me, Elizabeth. It's great to be back.
So last time you were here, we talked all about heavy lifting for runners, and I'm sure people are probably expecting, because you are a doctor of physical therapy, another episode that is physical therapy related, but we're going to take a totally different subject line this week, and we're going to be talking about running and training with a chronic illness. So go ahead and reintroduce yourself and tell us who you are.
Yes. So I'm Kate. I am a doctor of physical therapy. I am a strength coach, a run coach, and I work entirely online with runners who are living with chronic pain and chronic illness. This is something that I have recently shifted my focus towards in the last year, as my own personal story has evolved and as I've just felt really called to serve this client population.
So talk to us about your experience in being a runner living with chronic illness.
Yes. So it's kind of a long and winding story, which I would imagine is true of most people in my situation. So I'll try to keep it as concise as possible. But when I was way back in high school, I was diagnosed with chronic migraine initially. And this was my first experience with chronic illness. So I went through this while I was trying to run in high school, ultimately made the decision to not run in college due to the symptoms I was experiencing, was able to get my migraine management under control for the most part through college, which was fantastic. But that was kind of my first taste of, okay, like, I'm not calling all the shots here. Like, my body is, you know, making me make decisions that I don't necessarily want to be making. So that was a little bit of my first taste of it just as a teen. And then as an adult, over the last, I guess, few years, really around when like COVID all kind of started, I started experiencing a heightening of symptoms and different things coming on. My migraines were coming back. I was experiencing a bunch of different things. And it took, I guess, about a year or so of like doing some research, wondering what was going on, trying to figure it out, And ultimately, I was diagnosed with hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a connective tissue disorder. So it affects, you know, connective tissue is everywhere. It's, you know, bones, muscles, ligaments, all of those things. So it affects me systemically. I was also diagnosed with POTS, which is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, which is a neurological condition, but it's a form of dysautonomia where it is a dysfunction of the autonomic nervous system. So all of those things that just kind of keep us functioning. So getting the, you know, diagnosis of those two things definitely gave me a lot of validation for what I was experiencing and feeling. And going through this, you know, as someone who is a runner, is, and not even just being a runner, but being an active person, where this is really something that is a huge part of my life, having that freedom taken from me was huge. So I don't want to get too far into it, because I'm sure we'll talk more about this, but yeah, it's something that has impacted my life for a while, and you know, more significantly, more recently, it actually was one of the reasons why I ended up working online with coaching runners, because my symptoms came to a point where I was actually no longer able to maintain full-time one-on-one patient care in an outpatient orthopedic setting.
I'm just curious, do you feel like your experience being a physical therapist was helpful for you in achieving a diagnosis? Because I do know for a lot of runners with chronic illnesses, especially ones that present as more quote unquote invisible, sometimes the process is decades long to like finally get a, oh my God, somebody finally believes me and here's what's actually wrong.
You're so correct. And that is often the story that I hear from so many people. And I do think that my background as a physical therapist helped me. It's really funny though, because I honestly don't remember learning about Ehlers-Danlos syndrome in PT school. You would think that it being a connective tissue disorder, it would be something that we would know more about, but unfortunately it's just not the case. It is considered a rare disease, but more and more experts in the field, at least for the hypermobile type, are, you know, now telling us that it's not really as rare as we once thought it was. So yeah, it's kind of funny, but absolutely, it definitely did help me, because I think something that I maybe take for granted sometimes is having a higher sense of medical literacy. This is, you know, it's very difficult when we are experiencing things in our body, not knowing what's going on, and having a level of health education and knowing, you know, okay, this might be what I'm feeling. This kind of explains it, and being able to parse through some different research and look through some different things without, you know, not knowing any of the background was certainly helpful for me. And I think one of the reasons why I was able to, you know, get a diagnosis so soon, experiencing symptoms for a year or so and then getting a diagnosis, it sounds long, but like you said, most people, I think the average diagnosis is like 7 years or so. I was really lucky that I was able to find a specialist, you know, in my area to diagnose me. And he also mentioned that, you know, it isn't uncommon for people to, you know, stumble upon the diagnosis themselves, as, you know, a lot of health practitioners aren't super up to date on what to look for with this, specifically my condition.
Let's talk about this, what you said before. I'm not the one calling the shots. in my experience working with runners, and being obviously a runner myself, we tend to be people who like to exercise a lot of control over, at minimum, our running, right? If not like other aspects of our life. There is this, I think, impression of running that if you just work harder, you'll achieve your goals and like, you know, move past the discomfort, you know, all these things. But dealing with chronic illness forces you to reevaluate that. Talk to me about that.
Yes, 100%. So you're absolutely right when you say that, you know, most of us runners are, you know, we tend to be the kind of type A. We like things to be very planned out and things to go to plan and be able to follow and execute a plan to a T and all of those different things. So this is something that is very difficult for runners and just, you know, active people in general living with chronic illness to deal with. It is really important to take a step back and accept your limitation and abilities. And acceptance, it's very important to remember that acceptance is not giving up. It's not giving up or giving in. It is merely accepting the reality of your situation. So we're not fighting against ourselves anymore. We're learning how to work with our body and work with alongside our chronic illness and chronic pain or whatever you're dealing with, in order to, you know, participate in the sport to whatever degree we are able to, depending on what we're experiencing. I think this is really difficult for runners, like you said, because commonly we're used to just sitting down and being like, okay, I'm gonna PR in the half marathon this year, or I'm gonna, you know, run a marathon or do XYZ, all of these different things, having these goals. But when you really have to sit down and grapple with the fact that you don't necessarily get to choose that. There are so many other factors that are at play behind the scenes. And mentally, I think that sometimes this just makes a lot of runners just want to give up entirely.
Have you found that? Because I know you, like I said, you work specifically with runners with chronic illness, but you also like have a group, right? A group chat support group, right? Runners who can all, I know, like, yeah, I'm going through that as well. Is that something that you see, I want to say like denial, but kind of like, I'll just do it anyways. Like I'll figure out a way to do it anyways.
Yes. We often call it the like boom bust cycle. And I know this is used in other scenarios as well. But yes, runners getting stuck in that cycle of like getting into exercise, being stubborn like many of us runners are, and just saying, okay, I'm going to do all the things. That ending up being too much, triggering a symptom flare and then doing nothing and then rinse and repeat, right? So we're, you know, not really allowing ourselves to be consistent, stay steady, and all of these different things. So yes, this is something that I often see with the group, but I think that it's something that is more common with runners who are, you know, newer to living with chronic illness. Because I think at some point, if you are going to continually participate in the sport, that piece of acceptance has to come in at some point.
How do you then talk to runners who are, let's say a runner comes to you and they say, look, I have this going on, but I still have some goals I'd like to achieve, whether it's, you know, training for my first whatever or training for my 50th whatever, or I still have this time goal that I genuinely would like to chase. How do you, and obviously, like, it totally depends on the person and the situation, the condition, but how do you have that conversation?
Yeah, it's a difficult conversation. And a lot of times it's about managing expectations, managing timelines. So if we have a specific goal for a race distance or a PR or something like that, our timelines might look a little bit different. And a lot of it is just leveling with this runner on, you know, I understand that X, Y, and Z is what you want to do. Let's take an inventory of your current abilities and your current symptom levels and what you're currently able to do and see if we're able to make that happen. And sometimes it's super compatible. I do often have runners come to me who, you know, want to run, say, a half marathon or a marathon, and we're able to train, you know, in a way that is conducive to their health. Other times I have runners come to me and they have, you know, a big goal, but they're also experiencing, you know, a higher number of symptoms. They're not having, you know, any consistency in their health, and they're struggling to stay on, you know, I don't want to say to stay on a plan, but they're struggling with their consistency. Then it usually comes down to a conversation of, okay, how can we take a step back and look at this big goal that you have and break it down to a million little steps to get there, right? So, you know, that might look like, okay, you have a goal to run a marathon, but right now you're not able to, you know, maybe walk for 30 minutes. That, I mean, obviously that's a big stretch, but it can come down to a million tiny steps to get you towards that goal. I also often encourage runners to, especially when they're, you know, experiencing periods of time where their health isn't allowing for them to, you know, ramp up intensity in training, ramp up training volume, I try to encourage these runners to set goals that are a little bit different than the types of goals that we, you know, might think about, like, generally as a runner. So, for example, that could just be, you know, goals based on consistency. Say, like, okay, I want to get back to running twice a week, something like that. Or, you know, related to getting to a certain distance, but it doesn't matter how fast it is. So some different strategies like that can help us feel like we're still working towards meaningful goals, but not in a way that is detrimental to our health.
You mentioned, I want to say, like, you know, timing or approaching goals based on, you know, where are we starting from? How are we doing right now? Obviously, one of the features of chronic illness is that it does come in, like, I want to say, kind of these waves, right? I think it's one of the most frustrating things is kind of the unpredictable nature of, like, when you might be feeling good versus when you might be really struggling. Is there an indicator for you where it's like, hey, you know, if this is where you are right now, yeah, it could be a good idea to maybe go after, you know, some of the bigger goals that we have been trying to achieve?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say first thing would be asking how, you know, I would take an inventory of the last 3 to 6 months, how symptoms have been, how has our management been? Are we feeling like our symptoms are being managed well by our, you know, medications, lifestyle changes, things like that? And then also, are we meeting our basic needs? Are we, you know, fueling and eating enough to support just life in general and then training? Is our hydration where it needs to be at? Is our sleep, you know, where it needs to be at? All of those, like, hierarchy things. And if you've been experiencing a few months where, you know, you've been feeling well, you feel like you have good management, and you feel like you've nailed down the basics, then that would be an indicator to me that it would be appropriate to try to shoot for, you know, some of these types of goals. Elizabeth, I'm so sorry. I have to grab my phone charger.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, no, go ahead. You're good.
to do yeah. this, but I just noticed it's dying. Okay. Little chaos for your Thursday.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah, we just had the delivery man show. That's what the dogs were barking at.
Oh, it's always at the best timing. Okay. I'll just plug this in here. Okay. Sorry.
No, we're good. Sometimes there are some difficult conversations that need to be had. When you are talking to an athlete who, based on your professional opinion, is not in a place where it would be safe for them to try and pursue a goal, talk to me about that. Because obviously that's a really emotional conversation for the athlete to have, much less for you to have with them.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of this conversation, and it sounds a little bit silly to say, but it's true, it surrounds a grieving process, because that's what it really is. You are grieving your, you know, past abilities, maybe a future you saw for yourself, you know, a lot of different emotions. And it's also important to address the fact that running is one of those things that is so central to identity for so many people. You know, I'm a runner, it's who I am, like running is my stress relief, those types of things. So when we feel like we're losing control over that, sometimes we feel like we're losing a part of ourselves and a part of our identity. I know that's how I felt. So a lot of it is really just talking through the emotions that we're feeling, talking about ways that we can still participate in the aspects of the sport that we love in ways that are still safe. So that might be, okay, I really like being outside. Okay, so let's work on, if we're not at a point where we're running, let's work on a walking plan or something like that. Or, you know, maybe it's time to focus on some things that will help prepare the future you for running, like starting some of those little strength training pieces or, you know, whatever that is. I think that a lot of it is about, you know, allowing people to have the space to grieve. And it's not always a conversation that's taken well, I guess. I would say for the most part, when I'm having this conversation with people, I'm usually confirming things that they already know, but they, you know, were hoping to hear opposite. But sometimes, you know, people aren't ready to hear that. And that's okay. You know, it's not for me to say when someone is like ready to have that acceptance piece in their journey. And sometimes people have to, you know, kind of learn that themselves. But it really is mostly about talking about that grief and talking about that identity piece, and making sure that they're going to have strategies that will, you know, move them forward from that grief.
Obviously, everybody's situation is going to be different. But one of the biggest things that I emphasize working with runners who are dealing with chronic illness or even just like a weird time of life, right? Whether it's struggling with some, you know, stress in the family or, you know, actual like loss of a parent or a loved one or whatever it is flexibility, 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 flexibility. The pushback that I tend to get when I'm like, you be as flexible as you need to during this time is some sort of like, but what if I miss too many runs? Right? Like, oh, what if I missed any runs? I'm like, well, that means that you needed to skip those because the focus is not on the running right now. But that's a big one that I hear, like, how can I train for this thing if I can't be guaranteed that I'm going to be able to get all my training in? It's like, well, this is going to be a tough one, but there are never any guarantees, even if you did get all your training in.
So, so true. And training flexibility is so important. I mean, for runners in general, because like we're humans and life happens, but especially when you're living with chronic illness and your symptoms change day to day, week to week, month to month, different things like that. So this is something that comes up quite a bit with, you know, my one-on-one clients. I'll get, you know, a message in the middle of the week being like, I haven't done anything yet. Like, what should I do? That type of thing. And it's usually people like when we're first starting to work together and they're, you know, kind of learning the different strategies. But yes, it's really important to make sure that there's a lot of flexibility built in the schedule. It's really important to make sure that the athlete understands that I do not expect them to do everything on their calendar 100% of the time. Like even my healthy runners, I don't. One of the things that I actually didn't consider as a coach, but one of my clients brought up to me previously was, she had mentioned, you never make me feel bad for, you know, missing something or, you know, I feel it, but inside I feel like I'm letting you down. I'm like, you are not letting me down at all. at all. So that's something that has come up. But building flexibility in the schedule, so, you know, telling people different options on, okay, you know, if you're scheduled for a run but you're not feeling up to it, here are the options you have. And that might include cross training, like cycling or a walk, or, you know, something simple at home. If it's a more severe day, it might just be breathing exercises or relaxation techniques, different things like that. So that, you know, and also it could just be taking a full rest day, you know, because we just can't get it in, and that's totally fine. I think that a lot of what I do, and one of the probably my proudest compliments I've ever gotten as a coach, is helping people be kinder to themselves. That was something that one of my past clients at we were having an exit call, and they thanked me for helping them be kinder to themselves in training. And that was something that really struck a chord with me, and I think is very important. We have to be gentle with ourselves. I mean, we are our own worst critics, and it's so important that we don't get bogged down by, oh my gosh, I didn't do all of the things.
I think that's a tough one for kind of all of us at some point. Well, something that I do if I have a client who, for whatever reason, right, they'll write a little note like, I didn't have time to get to this today, and here's why. I'm like, great choice. Sounds like you didn't have time to get to it. Sounds like you made the right decision in not doing it. And you're right. Like, that really kind of blows people's minds at some point. You're like, wait, what? Like, I thought I was paying you to be my taskmaster. And I'm like, no, coaching is about helping an athlete find the most effective way to move forward towards their goals. And that does not mean like flogging them for missing a run.
Yes, absolutely. And it's so fun too for me when I see, you know, I have my runners leave comments on their app, like on their runs, just to kind of keep track of how they're feeling and things like that. It's really interesting to kind of see over time some of these people, you know, the initial comments will be more of like, I didn't get to this, and this is why, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the evolution will be down the road. I might see a comment like, yeah, I was planning on doing this today, but then, you know, X came up, or I was feeling this way, so I decided to do XYZ, or like miss it, move my schedule around, whatever. And I'm like, great, like, perfect. We're feeling good about this, you know. So it's kind of, initially, I think there's a little bit more handholding and it's not even really handholding. It's more just reaffirming and reassuring that they are making the right choice, because oftentimes they are making the right choice. So yeah, it's fun to see that kind of progression in people realizing that they're not a slave to their training schedule.
I know we talk a lot, and I want to talk about kind of like the hierarchy of like, if you have to modify your run for the day, but I want to talk about the flip side of that first, where it's like, what if you're feeling the best you felt in a while today? Like, what, you know, how much flexibility do you give your runners of like, hey, if you feel like 112% on Wednesday, you can do a little bit more, you can do a little bit extra, or like you can do, you know, that speed workout that is kind of our standard. Like, how do you communicate that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it kind of depends on the person and where they're at. If it's someone who is having a lot of ups and downs like this, I will typically recommend against doing more than we originally planned. And this is because we want to establish a sense of consistency. So like, and consistency doesn't look like doing, you know, all the things every single day. It's like this. People listening can't hear me, see me do that, but I'm going up and down with my hand. So we want to establish some sense of consistency. So, you know, even if we're feeling really, really good, but we have a scheduled rest day, feel really, really good on your rest day and enjoy that. But if it's someone, you know, if it's someone who isn't experiencing like as many of those fluctuations, and it's just, you know, someone that I've been working with for a while and I trust their judgment, then I might say like, yeah, absolutely, you can add an extra mile or so, or you can add some strides at the end or something simple like that. But usually I'm more so encouraging people to reel back then do more, if that makes sense, which I think is kind of a common theme for coaching in general. But yeah, I think that's how I would approach, you know, that kind of day.
Do you encourage your runners to keep track of how their symptoms are in relation to their running? Because here's the thing, like, nothing happens in a vacuum, and exercise is often viewed as something that's always beneficial. But as we know, you can overdo it really easily. Have you ever uncovered patterns with your runners where you're like, hey, it actually looks like when we do this, it makes this worse?
Yes. So like a small example of that would be, I have some runners living with chronic illness who really don't tolerate back-to-back days. Like we found, okay, back-to-back runs, not good. So we don't do them. And a lot of that is through trial and error. Typically, we would encourage like flare tracking alongside. So this can either be done like simply through just leaving your comments for me, like on your runs, and telling me how you're feeling. So my clients aren't only just communicating with me about how their training is going. They're also telling me how their sleep is, how has their nutrition been. So I get a lot of comments on saying like, okay, I felt not great on this run, but I also slept 6 hours last night. So, you know, that would be an indication to me that like, okay, that is a good reason why. But when we are seeing a pattern of like, okay, maybe we increased some variable of training, so we increase volume or intensity or something like that, and then we start noticing that we're feeling like our symptoms are flaring, we're feeling worse and worse, and usually that starts by like our recovery is poor, our sleep starts, you know, looking really not great, those types of things, and then we're experiencing more and more symptoms, then that would be an indicator that like, okay, we need to dial it back a little bit. And I like to think about training not as an on-off switch, but like a dial that we can turn up and down depending on how we're feeling. So that would be a case in which we would say, okay, we are not tolerating this training well, and exercise stress is only good stress if we are recovering from it, right? So that would be an indication that we need to dial it back down a little bit and play around with volume intensity and see if we can get you back to a baseline.
Have you ever had somebody come to you and said, I'm not cleared to run, but I want to do it anyways?
I have not necessarily had like that explicit scenario come, but I have worked with runners who have been told in the past, stop running, or like you shouldn't run. And also like strength training too. I've seen this as well, which is horrifying to me. But I see this a lot. So I have a few clients who also have hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and a lot of them have been told stop running, or like, you know, you shouldn't run, or even you shouldn't lift weight, which is like just so wrong. Like, you definitely should be strength training if you have EDS, hypermobile at least. But yeah, so a lot of that, you know, a lot of those conversations I have with people, I think, tend to occur after they've already kind of decided for themselves, yeah, I'm not going to listen to that. I'm going to seek out someone who's going to help me do this in a way that I can do this. So I think often more so people are coming to me, you know, after going through that process already of kind of realizing like what that person told me isn't necessarily great advice for me. And I would say telling anybody that they can't run or, you know, aren't cleared for an activity just as a blanket statement for a chronic illness is just so harmful. Because we know exercise is so beneficial for those living with chronic illness. That said, I actually did just remember a scenario. There are some cases where it's not beneficial. One of those cases, and I won't dwell on it too much, but is with chronic fatigue syndrome and myalgic encephalopathy, ME and CFS. Yeah, it's ME and CFS. And often what we get is post-exertional malaise with that. So when we're experiencing that graded exercise, so exercise that like increases over time with at like specific marks, is contraindicated. So that would be a case in which I would be having a discussion with that client about like, okay, yes, you can participate in exercise and movement, but it has to stay within your energy envelope. So we're not exceeding that, energy envelope. And for those people, sometimes that really does mean not running because running is just too intense, and it just looks more like walking. That is one of the cases that we know, graded exercise at least, which is an exercise plan that increases in intensity or volume or whatever without paying mind to the client. So just kind of, steadily increases. That would be something that I wouldn't recommend for those clients.
So, thinking about ways to modify a day on your schedule, and I think this is great advice for anybody, but how do you communicate to your clients? You're like, okay, if you have, let's say, an hour-long run with strides, and that's kind of like the best case scenario. You wake up and everything's good. You're like, yep, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do all of it. It feels really good. What are the kind of like, how do we step that back? Right? How do we then, okay, take a little bit away to like where, and then all the way up to, hey, I'm going to take a full rest day. But like, what does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So it can look a couple different ways. Oftentimes, I'm recommending my clients to end up swapping for a cross training session of like a similar duration. So if you like an hour run, I'd say like 45 to 60 minutes, easy cycling or walking or something like that. So that's one option that we can do. We could also just opt to shorten the run if they're feeling up to it, but I oftentimes see that it's the mode of exercise that they're needing to swap for. It's, going for a run is just too intense. So what are my other options? So cross training is something that I often will recommend first. And then, so typically I'll tell people, okay, if you think of a stoplight, so green is like your baseline symptom day. So it's not necessarily zero symptoms, but it's, what you live with on a normal baseline. That's like, okay, we're good to go as planned. Yellow would be your moderate symptom days. So this would be days where you feel like you can still get some movement in, but you're not going to be able to execute what is on the schedule. That would be a day where I would be recommending that kind of like equal duration cross training. Or I do have some people who tolerate like strength training better than a run, when they're, feeling that kind of way. So those types of people might opt for a strength training session instead and just move the schedule around. And then we have our red, which is like our severe symptom days. And those are days where we are opting to either do something like I guess the step downs would be like, okay, we could potentially just have them do a short little circuit where they're doing very easy moves that are still working towards their, goals in running and fitness. So that might look like doing some intrinsic foot exercises or simple things like that. So we're still, making progress towards our goals in that way. It could also mean doing some breath work to just work on relaxation and grounding techniques, working on some mindfulness. And then all the way back down to, not doing anything. And I think it really kind of depends on the person. And as someone who is going through this experience learns more about themselves, they're better able to make those choices for them. So it's a lot of, I don't want to say guesswork, but it is a little bit of guesswork in the beginning of finding out, what specifically works for you when you're feeling this type of way.
Swapping runs for cross training, is that because you tend to find that it's easier to keep it truly like a low intensity on a cross training? Is it because it's low to no impact or both? How does that work?
Kind of both, and also because it's like more in a controlled situation, you can do it either. So for me personally, one of the things that I'll opt for sometimes is cozy cardio. So this is something that another creator coined, but basically it's, you know, I'm doing my cardio, essentially like in my pajamas. I have like a little pedaler that I put in front of my couch, and it's a low stimulating environment, that, you know, I can control, and I can have, you know, whatever I need next to me, water, different fluids, anything like that. I can stop at any time. I don't have a lot of stimulation, so things that could be like setting me off even more. So I think it's something that I often opt for my runners, because, you know, it's easier to make it lower intensity. A lot of times when we're, you know, trying to modify and easier on, like, okay, then we're just walking, and that's fine too. That's also, you know, a good form of cross training. But sometimes my clients don't tolerate being upright very well on their, you know, higher symptom days. So something like cycling is a good option for people like that.
How do you approach the conversation with somebody who is like gonna like determined to do it anyways? Like, when would you get concerned with somebody's like, I am all the symptoms all the time, but I'm just going to do it anyways because I'm just going to push through and like just do it because I have this goal. Like, at what point were you going to raise your hand and be like, hey, this is really actually bad for you?
Yeah. So, and I have done this before. Like, I have gotten in a call with a runner and been like, hey, like I can't coach you. Like, we're, you know, what you're shooting for and what you're experiencing right now are not aligned. And it just, you know, was a situation where we couldn't necessarily reach an agreement on that. So, you know, that type of situation often looks like this person is, you know, experiencing a lot of symptoms. They are maybe in denial about the reality of their situation. And, you know, sometimes they, you know, get to that goal, but I think more often than not, it, you know, becomes a self-realization thing. But oftentimes when I see people like that, it's like people who like aren't sleeping, opting for training over sleep, not fueling themselves properly. So like things that, you know, you would see in, you know, any runner that you might be concerned about for them reaching that goal. But then on top of that, we're, you know, having symptom flares, we're not feeling like we have good control over, you know, our health and things like that. I do not encourage that. So I do not work with people who are unwilling to compromise on that. And that's unfortunate, because I do obviously hope for everybody that they'll be able to, you know, find a way to participate in the sport in a meaningful way for them that isn't detrimental to them. But a lot of people just have a very hard time with that. And a lot of runners are very all nothing. You know, if I don't do this, if I can't do it this way, if I'm not running 30 miles a week, I'm not happy. That type of thing. And sometimes it's, you know, sometimes you just can't get through to that. And oftentimes these people have to come to that realization on their own. And unfortunately, that often ends with, you know, them in a big flare after, you know, pushing for too long. I often reference, you post a really great chart all the time you know, recovery and
the stress comparison.
Yeah. I call it like up when I talk to my clients about it. But yes, you know, when we are exceeding our levels of stress and all of those things, that we're not recovering, and that means that our training is not beneficial for us. So yeah. It's a difficult thing.
I would think, you know, thinking from a coaching standpoint, to think, okay, if somebody, you know, came to me and was dealing with a chronic illness, you know, my, like what I would hope to accomplish with them in the first 4 to 6 months would just to establish consistency. Like, no, we're not going to train for a race. No, we're not going to set a time goal. Like, we're not going to set weekly mileage goals. We're not going to do any of that. We are going to get to a point where things feel comfortable and consistent. Is that what you typically encourage?
100%. Yes, absolutely. So typically when someone, you know, reaches out to me and they're a runner living with chronic illness, they explain their situation to me. More often than not, it is, we have no races on the calendar. We are working to establish baselines. So how much training can we tolerate without, you know, tipping the scales too much? And then, okay, we've been at this level for, you know, a training block, like 4 to 6 weeks. Can we tolerate, you know, a slight increase? And that might be, you know, adding another session per week or, you know, slightly increasing the overall volume, things like that, whichever, whatever their goal might be. So making sure that we're able to make smart incremental changes over time and keeping consistent with that. And sometimes it looks like building up, but then backing off a little bit if we're not feeling well. And, you know, like that dial I explained a little bit about earlier. But yes, absolutely. I strongly encourage those first, like you said, 4 to 6 months, which it sounds like a long time to people, but it's really not. I have a 4-month coaching minimum for my one-on-one. Just, you know, a lot of coaches have that just because of, you know, there's a lot of change we can make in that time. But, you know, if we only give ourselves a month, we aren't giving ourselves enough time. So yeah, that would be what I would recommend focusing on first, is just building that consistency in your schedule, whatever that looks like for you. And for some people that might look like working up to running twice a week and, you know, lifting once a week. Other people, it might look like a lot more than that. It just totally depends on who you are and what your starting point is.
Are there any other practitioners that you encourage runners to work with, other than, of course, like their actual medical team, but in terms of, in a, like a sports specific way?
Yes. Oftentimes it's dietitians is oftentimes the biggest one that I will recommend. When it comes to chronic illness, dialing in that nutritional piece, especially for supporting running, is so important, because a lot of us aren't meeting those goals, like those standards already. A lot of us aren't hitting our recommended hydration, and those hydration goals might be way higher depending on what you've got. So for me with POTS, like I have to eat a ton of salt and drink a ridiculous amount of water. So I often encourage my runners living with chronic illness, if they're able to work with a dietitian who, you know, is well-versed in working with athletes, so that they can help them really nail that down. Because like I said earlier, those foundational building blocks are so much more important than really anything else. Like making sure your fueling is good, making sure you're sleeping enough, making sure you're, you know, resting enough. Those things are so, so ultimately important for those of us, I mean, for humans in general, but for those of us living with chronic illness, if we don't have those things down, those are some of the things that can really set us off.
Something I talked to some of my athletes about is this concept of snowballing. So like, I'll give you an example. Let's say that, you know, they were up all night because their kid was sick. Okay, now they're sleep deprived. And then they're more likely to make kind of weird choices about food and nutrition. Okay, and then their run kind of sucks, so they push too hard. And then like, and say it's like, it's not any one thing. It's like one thing that kind of snowballs into this other pattern of like, oh, and now a week later, we feel like absolute garbage, right? Are there any concepts like that that you talk about or kind of help your runners work through in terms of like, okay, if this happens, here's the next step so it potentially doesn't get worse?
Yeah, that's a great, I love the term, the snowballing term. That's a great analogy. Certainly something I chat with my athletes about, and something that we learn to kind of work through. So for example, a lot of sleep is a big issue with a lot of my runners. And so we talk a lot about like, okay, if we had a really, really bad night of sleep, is it the best option to go for the run today? You know, those types of conversations. So learning over time, you know, their bodies, how they respond. And oftentimes that leads to them making their own decisions down the line, like saying like, hey, I had a really bad night of sleep last night and I, you know, just didn't get this done. Great. Or, hey, I had a really stressful day of work yesterday. I got home really late and, you know, I wanted to get to this, but I didn't. On the flip side, sometimes I'll see people be like, I worked 10 hours or 12 hours today, and then I got home really late, but I still did my run at like 9 p.m. I'm like, why? Why? So yeah, absolutely pointing out those different types of things of like, hey, these are the little pieces that we can catch initially to make sure that we're setting ourselves up for success down the line. Because if we just, you know, make a minor modification here and say, okay, we're not going to push it this day because we're, you know, having a little extra stress because we have a lack of sleep, might prevent us from missing like a whole week the next week.
That mindset, that the way that we communicate sometimes in fitness culture, that like no pain, no gain, like if you really wanted it, you do it anyways, like at all costs. I mean, I spent a lot of time trying to work through my athletes about this. Like you said, yeah, I mean, even for somebody who doesn't have chronic illness, if you've, you know, slept 3 hours last night, you've been at work since 7 a.m. and now it's 9 p.m. and you're still going to try to do your speed workout, like, why? Like, oh my God, take the day off. Like, that's not... it's not a good idea sometimes. Try again tomorrow, or like, we'll do it next week. Don't worry about it. But I think there's a lot of that internalized, like, if I really, like, I'm a person who cares about myself and my goals if I do these really challenging things. And like divorcing those two concepts, like your ability to work hard and achieve goals, like, it's not dependent on how much torture you put yourself through.
That's so true. It's so true. And a lot of runners wear it like a badge of honor, right? It's, you know, the grind, the hustle, you know, pushing through. But it's so unfortunate that that kind of mindset is glamorized. And it's something that, you know, I do a lot of dismantling with my athletes about. And oftentimes these are people who are coming to me, you know, living with chronic illness, who are already kind of denouncing the like aspects of society and culture in general that's very grind focused and hustle focused, because it just is not conducive to the reality of our situation. Oftentimes it's even harder to parse that out when it's tied to, you know, your sport and like I alluded to earlier, to your identity, like, this is who I am. But I think once people really start to understand, you know, exercise isn't always good for me, it's not always a good thing, right? I think once people start to recognize that, and then also start to really learn and understand the ways in which different forms of stress influence their training and how they feel, I think that is when it starts to click and they start noticing, you know, if I don't make those decisions that I think are me being tough, you know, then I actually have a better time.
It's hard too, because, you know, we have these stories about like, oh, you know, this woman ran 50 marathons during chemo, or this, you know, these like really, you know, crazy stories. And I was like, I'm not, you know, diminishing those accomplishments. That is absolutely wild, right? Or people who live with a chronic illness who are going into these unbelievable, like really incredible things. But it's also the same, I think, challenge that when a normal person looks at somebody like David Goggins, where it's like, that's somebody who is truly, truly, truly at the far end of exceptional, like a true outlier. And to then be like, 99% of people are like, that's not going to be realistic for them. It's tough. It's tough to be like, it's tough to choose the gentle way sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also we're, you know, kind of inundated with this inspiration porn.
Yes.
That you know, is, you know, pushed through, or like, I don't let my chronic illness stop me. And it's like, that is just, you know, some people might find that helpful, but I do not find this helpful because my chronic illness does stop me sometimes, and that's totally fine. There's nothing to be ashamed of for that. And you don't get a gold medal for pushing through. You know, it's not the suffering games. So I think that it is really helpful for people to kind of take a step back from that mentality and that, you know, being made to feel like pushing through is the expectation, and then being gentler with yourself is not something worthy of praise. I think that is such a difficult mindset to get out of, and to not feel like you're making the lazy choice by opting for rest, because that pushing through and that grind is so glamorized. Like you said, even with people for like who are really seriously ill, like healthy people will point to that and be like, look, like they never let it stop them. They're so inspirational. And like, yes, they're doing great things, but that doesn't, it shouldn't be the standard across the board for us.
I know something that I talk to, or just talk about in general, is this kind of trade-off of seasonality and like times when you have the ability to give more and dedicate more and devote more to your training and to your recovery, and times when you have less. I think even for runners who don't have chronic illness, understanding that if you're going to go after a really aggressive goal, you other things in your life are going to need to essentially take a back seat, or you're going to have to sacrifice other areas of your life. Is that a conversation that you have with some of your athletes about like, hey, it's probably realistic to go after this goal, but like, that's going to be your whole focus. Like, you're not going to be able to really do anything else because the focus is going to be training and recovery and helping keep your life on track.
Yes. I think that a lot of times runners don't necessarily consider all the other things that go into preparing for a race aside from just the actual training itself. So absolutely, these are conversations that we have. You know, this is a big goal. This is going to take up the majority of, you know, your stress availability, your energy availability. You may have to say no to, you know, social outings, or you may have to make difficult decisions on how you want to spend your time, or, you know, XYZ, you have to prioritize so many different things in order to make this work. Is this what you truly want? And oftentimes my runners with chronic illness are looking to find balance. They're looking to find a way to participate in which it doesn't take everything from them, in which they're still able to live their lives. So yes, absolutely. When we're in a situation where we're ready to tackle a big goal, that is a huge conversation I have with my runners on like, hey, if this is the goal, this is what it's going to take, you know, how do you feel about that? And if we don't feel good about that, what is a different goal that we can work towards that does fit into your idea of, you know, what a good training week would look like?
How do you help your runners feel like they still have autonomy and choice in their goals? Because I would imagine sometimes with chronic illness, it can feel like, oh, I'm only allowed to essentially do this one thing. And I'm at the whim of whatever my body decides.
Yeah, it is. It's such a hard question. And I think oftentimes it is, you know, working with these runners to find different goals. So not necessarily like a PR goal or a race distance goal, but okay, maybe say this spring we have a goal of I'm going to run on a new trail every month. For one of my runs, I'm going to go to a new trail. So different things like that are a little bit more in our control. You know, I'm trying to think of another example, but those little types of things that are, you know, really easy switches to make that don't necessarily take more from us, but help us feel like we are able to make some more decisions for ourselves, I think is helpful.
And lastly, is there any, I don't want to say guidance, words of wisdom, something that you want people to know if they are struggling that you have, I want to say, learned the hard way?
Yes. Running is not therapy. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I haven't touched on yet chatting with you today. You know, when you are finding yourself in a situation where if you're someone who uses running as your stress relief and you're, you know, everything when it comes to your mental health, and you're in a situation where that is quite literally taken from you, you don't have that option. And this is also for like injured runners, you know, that type of thing. It's really important to have other strategies outside of running and other things that you like to do outside of running that make you feel like you, because it's all fun and games when you say like, I don't know who I am without running, or like my identity as a runner. Like that's really cute until you can't run and then you don't know who you are. So I think that talking to a mental health professional is very important. And it took me a few tries to find a therapist that was a good fit for me. So, you know, it's not always that you're going to find the right one right off the block. Same thing with like coaches and things like that. And also just making sure that you are, you know, learning a little bit more about yourself outside of running. Personally, I found that I was like, I don't, you know, like, what do I like to do? What do I like about myself that doesn't have to do with being active? Because for me, if it wasn't running, it was hiking or, you know, doing something like that. So for me, I've personally gotten into, you know, watercolor painting has been something that I've, you know, really enjoyed doing. I can do it sitting. It's great for my mental health. I've gotten back into reading. So making sure that you're exploring those other facets of yourself as well, and working on that mental health piece, I would say is a huge recommendation for people who are struggling right now.
I mean, I think it's just great advice for anybody who, you know, never put all of your identity eggs in one basket, especially when it has such a high injury rate as running does.
Right. It's so fragile and it's not a guarantee.
Kate, thank you so much for being here today and sharing your experience and your guidance. If somebody is listening to this conversation and is looking for more support or to just get to know you better, how can they do that?
Yeah, so you can visit me over at my page on Instagram at @_running_DBT. I have a Spoonie Runner group chat that you can join. If you send me a DM, I will send you the link for that. It's actually over on Discord. It's just, you know, a bunch of runners with chronic illness. There's no training involved in it. It's just a hub for people who are experiencing, you know, similar things to chat. And then if you're looking for additional guidance, I am accepting one-on-one clients in my one-on-one run and strength training program, the Strong Runner Evolution. And I am looking to work with runners who are living with chronic illness and chronic pain.
You heard it here. She's got space available. Kate, thank you so much. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget, you can always find and follow me on Instagram at Running Explained. And if you're looking for a coach or a training plan, check me out. Visit my website, runningexplained.co. That's runningexplained.co. See you next time. This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you have regarding a medical condition.